to A Nightmare on Fear Street.
We're Trent and Sheree, and we're chatting about the fiercest genre.
Expect hot takes, cold drinks, and a couple of fights.
Check out the link in the episode description to connect with us via the usual socials, Patreon, and our YouTube channel. All right, everyone. Well, I would say we're back. Today, I'm going to say I'm back, because today, this is my solo episode, and I chose to cover Knock at the Cabin with Jen from My Streaming Bubble. Welcome back, Jen.
Hi, thank you so much. I'm very, very excited. Thank you for asking me to be on your solo episode and for picking this movie. So I can't wait.
Yes, this movie has I have so many thoughts, so many questions, so many concerns.
Yes, absolutely.
But before we get into the movie, let's get caught up. What you've been watching, playing, reading, etc.?
Oh, well, I haven't actually been watching a whole hell of a lot, because ever since The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt for PlayStation came into my life, I have done nothing but ignore everything and play that game. So I am obsessed with it. I love it. It's a lot of fun. There's so much to do between just like the side quests and the main quests and just riding around and bumping into bandits and monsters and stuff. So I love it. So that's what I've been spending most of my time doing. When not doing that, I'm just kind of going through some casual rewatches of like The Walking Dead, Once Upon a Time. Trying to stay current with Our Flag Means Death. I think I'm an episode behind, but I love that show. I love it so much.
Yeah, I have a friend who loves that show. I haven't watched any of it, but she says I would love it. We'll see. I have a lot on my plate.
Yeah, right. I totally understand that. So if you get a chance, I think it's just kind of makes you happy. It's very joyful in a way. So
yeah. Okay, so what's going on with My Streaming Bubble?
Oh, let's see. Not a whole heck. I mean, just kind of the huge. I just had my 4-year podiversary.
Congrats.
Thank you. I was going to try and put out like a special bubble episode, mini bubble for that. But we've had a bit of like a sickness kind of run through the house over this last month. So it's been very keeping things kind of low key, not putting a lot on the plate as we just kind of navigate all of that. So, otherwise, let's see. I've done the Watch and React mini bubbles for an online poll that I did where it was between Talk to Me, Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey, and Cobweb. So I recorded my Cobweb episode today, and I'll have that edited, and that'll be out as soon as I finish.
Nice. Cobweb was very good. I enjoyed it a lot.
You'll have to wait for the episodes.
Oh, hot takes already. Yeah, it wasn't perfect, but I did enjoy it. I thought that, I can never remember her name. The mom.
Lizzie Kaplan.
She's always fantastic in everything.
Yeah, I will say the performances were great, and Anthony Starr is very, very, very good looking. So I enjoyed that part, definitely.
Yes. Okay, what else you got going on? You got anything else on the side of Streaming Bubbles?
Let's see. Well, my podcast brain twin, or, you know, podcast bestie, Erin over at It's a Fandom Thing podcast, her and I started a podcast because why not? You know, we don't have enough going on.
YOLO.
But it's once a month, so that kind of eases things, and then we take turns editing. But basically, we pick a movie that maybe we've both seen, neither of us has seen, but the main thing is we don't know how the other one feels about it. So we watch it, and then we gather and try and guess how the other one feels. And by the end of it, if we disagree, then that's fine, and I just tell Erin why she's wrong. It's called Twin It to Win It podcast. So if we agree, then we've twinned it. But yeah, if not, then I just bully her for the rest of the episode.
Nice. That sounds like a lot of fun. Yeah. We'll have to check it out.
Well, we had our first episode come out, and we actually covered Creep. I saw you guys just recently did an episode, so I have to listen to that because I was like, yes. Oh my God.
We are both Creep stan accounts, so...
Yep. And you guys did both the first and the second one. So yes. I really, Yeah, I really need to listen to that because we only covered the first one. And then I watched the second one and I sent her a message. I was like, we're not going to cover Creep 2 because I love this movie. I just had to say it.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. All right. Well, let's get into this movie because, ooh, girl, there's a lot to talk about.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. So one of my first thoughts is, okay, like right away, Dave Bautista, wrestler to actor. I'm loving this journey for him. And I was absolutely blown away by his performance and his character. I was really like sus of him for the longest time just because I don't know what the hell's going on. I don't know who these people are. I'm just like, I don't know. You're kind of creepy. Approaching a small child in the middle of nowhere is a giant red flag.
That was my first note. I said, I would not have felt this comfortable with a strange man coming out of the woods towards me, even as a child. Mm-mm. As a child, I would have ran back into the cabin and was like, Mom, Dad, oh my God, there's a man outside.
Absolutely. So I was very tense watching him for most of the movie. So, and especially in the beginning, but yeah, I'm thoroughly impressed by his performance.
Yeah, I agree. I will say this with Leonard. He grew on me. At first, I was like, you're really flat. Like it's not the actor. It's not the performance. It's the writing. Mm-hmm. It's just very it's just a very slow burn for him, I think. And I'll get to my thoughts more about this later, because I think I'll just go ahead and say it. I think Leonard secretly knows that all four of them have to die.
I could see that.
So he's just kind of accepted it and like going along and like, you know, he doesn't want them to, of course, but like he is accepted that they're probably going to die, because like who would make this choice so quickly? I mean, Redmond never had a chance, which I'm happy mm-hmm. about, but like, who, like, yeah, the first, especially the first two, like, you're shit out of luck. Like, but these four, this group of four, so I have general thoughts for each of them. Sabrina, she's the only one I felt like was not, and the other three, I was like, you feel like you're kind of in on this. Mm-hmm. Like, you feel like you're kind of wanting, like, you're kind of like enjoying it a little bit. She's the only one that I was like, you feel like terrible that you're asking this mm-hmm. family to do this. Redmond is a psychopath, and Leonard starts out kind of flat, but he gets more later on. I would say especially that third act, he gets a whole lot. And Adrian is just a wild card.
Yeah, sure. I could see that. Yeah. I absolutely agree with Sabrina, especially because, yeah, right away you get the sense like she really doesn't want to do this. She's a nurse. That's one of the first things that she tells them. So it's like she's a helper. She's a healer. Yeah, Redmond, you know, and yeah, I didn't like Redmond. This was my second time watching it. Now, obviously, life has been rough for Ron Weasley. Oh, my God. And I didn't know that that was him for the longest time.
You didn't know?
No, I didn't. So he did a really good job. But I never really fell down the Harry Potter fandom rabbit hole. So this time around, watching Redmond and just knowing how everything all plays out, I understand that he's acting out of total fear, because I think he does know that he's the first one. And not to say that that's like, okay, but yeah, it was just like, I could see it the second time, whereas the first time I was just like, you're kind of a dick.
Right. Yes. This movie definitely deserves a second watch because it does change mm-hmm. a little bit. But the reason to me that Redmond is a psychopath is that, does he not recognize them?
See, and I wondered that, but I wondered if, like, you know, because the attack was however many years, like a year or so ago or a couple of years prior to.
It had to have been two or three, because that was before they got Wynn. Mm-hmm. And Wynn is like a 4 or 5 year old now, and they get Wynn as a, not an infant, but not a toddler.
Okay. Because just in this rewatch, and he kind of says that he's made poor choices in his youth and who hasn't and everything. So it makes me wonder, I guess I just kind of assumed that he was going through some shit when he was at that time, when he encountered Eric and Andrew. I'm thinking maybe a drinking problem. I didn't think he recognized them. And I just kind of assumed that that was whatever shit he was going through.
Yeah, I guess I just wish there would have been something, because like, there is no reason to gay bash someone, like, period. But, like, even when what's-his-face recognizes mm-hmm. him, Andrew recognizes him, he says, no, that's him. He's lost weight and changed his beard, but that is the dude that attacked mm-hmm. me. And he is adamantly like, no, that's not me. No, that's not me. No, that's not me. And it's like, as soon as you're, even if you didn't recognize them at the beginning, you know then. Mm-hmm. And you don't even say, like, at least acknowledge that you fucked up to the person you fucked up
right,
to.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah, I didn't have a lot, but I do want to say that when Sabrina got shot, that was the one I was like, oh! Mm-hmm. That was the only of the four that I was like, oh, damn.
Yeah.
I kind of wanted her to live. Because mm-hmm. this is my question, and I'm curious your thoughts.
Okay.
What happens if any of those four don't kill any of the four? Because that's how they release these quote-unquote plagues. So, like, what happens if you just say, fuck it, no, we're not doing it?
That's a really good question, because they don't address that, like, at all. And those four seem to be, like, they've had these visions, and so they are very sold on it. And maybe that's why they were picked, because they don't really explain why these four were picked, and really, truly a reason why Andrew and Eric were picked. But maybe it's because they'd be easier to convince and less to ask questions, more likely to follow orders. No, I don't. But that's a good, I have no idea. Just immediate end.
And I wish there would have been a little more to that. Like, why are these? Because I get it. This is essentially a cult, right? Like, this is cult thinking. I liked when Andrew was like, no, this is group parent. What is it? He mm-hmm. gave it the psychological term, the, you know, group cult think or whatever. Like, you've convinced yourselves to have these through a message mm-hmm. board, which they conveniently just accidentally mm-hmm. drop mm-hmm. in the middle of this conversation, of them trying to convince them of this. So I was just like, I just wanted a little more of, like, why are you? And like, if I read into them, and maybe that's what M. Night Shyamalan wanted us to do, because, like, okay, Redman clearly has a checkered past. So, like, he has his demons, and he's trying to redeem himself now. Adrian is a mother. A mother will do anything to protect mm-hmm. their children. Sabrina is the one. Sabrina and Leonard are the two that I have the hardest time trying to figure out why. I mean, maybe Sabrina just has such a big heart that she doesn't want anyone to die. And Leonard is thinking of the mm-hmm. children. Maybe that's what it is. But I needed that. Like, it could have just been one little line of dialogue and it would have solved that. But, like, that's one plot hole. I was like, M. Night, we gotta have a little chit chat. You need an editor to come over these scripts and be like, but hold on a minute.
See, and I kind of liked, I mean, I have the same questions. Like, why these four? Why these two? How, you know, like, yeah, it's they met on a message board. And I do like how the movie really kind of, at least for me, I went a lot of back and forth. Up into a point of, like, are they telling the truth? Are they just some cuckoo bananas cult? So I liked how M. Night layered all of that and kind of maintained that, because I liked that uneasiness of it.
Yes, truly up until the very end when the lightning is striking and you see the plane falling in the background of Andrew outside the house mm-hmm. or the cabin, I kept mm-hmm. going back and forth. I was like, is this real? Is this not real? And the flu pandemic, that was too real. M. Night, we gotta have this was too soon. Too soon. Too soon, my dude.
And then Andrew had, like, great explanations too as to why this was all just a setup and they were being targeted.
Right.
You know, he's looking at his watch. Leonard's constantly looking at it because it's all timed. He's gotta turn it on at a certain time. It's all pre-recorded. So that all adds to that seed of doubt that just kind of continues to grow. And so I love that. And normally I'm always like, I need to know all the answers and why, but I kind of like not knowing for this one.
This is one of the few times I think M. Night Shyamalan gives us enough that I don't, it kind of bugs me why I don't get those characters. I think it's just because I wanted to connect more to any of those four mm-hmm. besides Sabrina. Because, like, Adrian, you kind of get a little bit right before she dies. Because, like, I've never seen on screen someone's eyes water up like that. That was, like, chef's kiss acting. Like, so good.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just wanted a little bit more of that. I will say I liked that the couple, the family was mm-hmm. random, because that kind of gives you like that hero's journey that it's usually just like the Bilbo, the Frodo Baggins, the random hobbit in the mid, like that has nothing, there's nothing really special about him. He just is normal. And I like that it's a queer couple that's just mm-hmm. the normal family that has their ups and downs and their arguments. Like I like the flashback right before he gets attacked of him being like, you have a temper. And he was like, well, you suck mm-hmm. the life out of everything. And I was like, damn, dude, that is not on the level. Like, that is not on the level. It's because Eric was like, you know, you could kind of be a little calmer. And he was like, well, yeah. You fucking suck. And I was like, well, damn.
Yeah, I loved these two, the dynamic, you know, Eric kind of being like the softer spoken one. You know, he's more kind of taking everything in. Also, he's like concussed through the movie, but
true.
But for some reason, like, I was really drawn to like Andrew and his anger.
I was especially after we find out he was mm-hmm. attacked, I was like, okay, now it makes complete sense. Like, you are in fight mode. I was also like, you know, if I had a significant other and a child, would it be terrible to walk the earth alone?
I mean, we're introverts, so.
There'll be animals. I could have all the pets. Yes,
exactly.
See, I don't need humans. Actually, I do. I lie. But if I had one other person and a kid, like, you know, I know it would suck for her. I get it. But that's why I was also like, I kind of want to see what happens if they
right?
don't.
Oh my gosh, right? Yes.
And apparently, this is based on a book.
I saw that in doing my research today. I didn't know that. Wasn't super surprised, though.
No, me neither, because M. Night needs some source material to work with. Because when he goes wild, he goes wild. But I've heard the ending is different, so I'm curious.
Yes, I looked up what the... according to IMDb, it said that Andrew does not kill Eric in the novel, although its ending is at least equally as tragic. Instead, their daughter, Wen, is killed during the struggle over the gun. And then my note next to that was just, oh, shit. I don't like that.
I mean, oh, that would be heart, like, stab my heart out. Oh, like, oh my God.
No kidding. Okay. Ugly cry.
Yeah, I don't like that better Dave. Than what we got. No. Let the world end. Like, yeah. That's where I'm at. But yeah, like, this movie wastes no time. I was like mm-hmm. kind of shocked because I'd watched this once before. And I was like, okay, there's going to be some like setup. No, she's getting the grasshoppers and he walks up. Like, mm-hmm. it is like, here we go. Mm-hmm.
And I love that too, because again, there's no build up to who these four people are or really anything. And it's just this cute little girl in the woods, like, you know. And then, yeah, all of a sudden this big, burly, tattooed stranger comes sauntering up, no big deal. And she's just like, hey.
In the middle of nowhere. Like, there's not, like, a city. It's like a block where, like, randos walk around all the time. Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, so she, I love that, too. And then immediately, like, once she starts kind of getting freaked out, she takes off. And then we get the seven knocks on the door, which... I didn't notice the first time, but the second time, you know, closed captioning said seven knocks. And I was like, ooh, that is specific. So
yes.
Goes along with the.
I never understood why that was seven.
Well, it's all.
Because there's seven characters?
Because there's seven characters. It's all like Bible-ly related. Oh, right, like the right. seven trials or something when the four
seven
horsemen.
Seven deadly sins.
Seven. Yeah. After the four horsemen arrive. So. So yeah, it's that, but I didn't know that. I had to have the internet tell me. So thanks, internet.
Right. Yeah, that's super interesting. I did like all of the like tie-ins, like they're the four horsemen of the apocalypse, so they all had to die. I liked, yeah, it was just super interesting. And it's like, again, and I did, oh, part of, okay, I'm on the fence about this because like part of me likes that it was a queer couple who saved the world, because it's like, yes, mm-hmm. here for that. But part of me didn't like it that they had to save the world by sacrificing one of them. Mm-hmm. Like
that trope.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm on the fence. Like I like the queer superhero, the hero journey for a queer couple. I'm not here for them having to sacrifice one of them to become that hero.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I agree. The first time I watched this, I enjoyed the movie all the way up until the ending.
Same.
And I was like, no.
Same. And I will say, though, on a second watch, I didn't hate the ending as much, but I still struggle.
I completely agree. I didn't hate it this much this time around, but I still just, I didn't like it. Call me petty. I want the world to end. Fuck them all.
Same. Let me hang out in the forest with the deers and the antelope with my husband and my child. What else do I need?
Exactly. We're going back to, you know, the homesteading days and whatever, living off the grid. Right. Like,
right.
I watch those shows. I can do it.
Let the planes drop. Yeah. You know. Like,
but I just,
you shouldn't have been up there in the first place.
And yeah, there was like said, oh my god, this was terrible of me. But you know, there were like 700 planes just falling out of the sky, and I'm like, with all the cancellation and delays, there's really 700 airplanes in the sky. That's mean, but
really,
at the same time.
I mean, I guess globally, maybe.
Maybe, yeah. There's all those smaller ones that we don't fly on, so.
True, true. That's true. Yeah, they didn't say they were all commercial airlines.
Yeah.
I would also say, I felt like the news anchors, I was like, that made it feel fake, too, because they didn't feel affected until that last woman. She's the only one that kind of felt affected by what she was reporting on. Mm-hmm. Like, the first lady was like, yeah, an earthquake happened, and this tidal wave is coming. It's pretty bad, but, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I was like, girl.
Like, a little more, you know, freaking out. And then, like, the tidal wave one, that one, okay, that one bothers me because, and this is kind of why, like, where some of the pettiness comes in, because people are fucking stupid. When the water starts to recede that much, fucking run. I know the
is
size
it
of that
all the
wave.
Way heavy, they're like, what's that?
Yes. And they're like filming it. And I'm just like, oh, god damn. Like, no. And it's like, yes, the size of that wave, you're fucked. You're not getting away from that. But no one tried.
Right.
And that's why I'm sometimes like, Thanos was right. I don't know.
Yes. I would also say I do think the middle of this movie dragged a tiny bit. Like between Redmond dying and the escape attempt,
mm-hmm.
I was like, okay, some of this could be sped up a little bit. We could have shaved 5-10 minutes off easily. Like, did we need all the shots of Wynn sneaking through the basement? Like, did we to get it? Like,
mm-hmm.
I don't, yeah, there's just some shots. I was like, I get it, M. Night, you like to masturbate, but like, let's move the plot along here.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, the one sneaking through the basement, I think that's when I was like, all right, time to check IMDb. But it's, right. And yeah, I get it, suspense, and oh my god, is she going to make it out or not? You know, yeah, fine. But yeah, I could see that, but I don't, like, this movie was still about an hour and a half or...
Hour 40.
Yeah, all right. I could see maybe there could be 10 minutes or so shaved here and there.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I would be okay with 5 minutes. Like, because it didn't drag a ton. Like, it right. didn't pull me all the way. I wasn't like, okay, when is this movie over? But I was like, come on.
Mm-hmm.
Come on.
Yeah. I could see that. Yeah, I'd be all right with that. So, one thing that kind of, again... within that whole like seat of doubt and everything. So it's also random, yet they move very ritualistic when it's getting time to unleash one of the plagues, when it's time to kill one of them, the four.
Mm-hmm.
The way that they stand and the way that they carry their tools, which I thought was also interesting that Leonard corrected and said that they are not weapons, they are their tools. Also, again, kind of leading into very cult-like thinking and mm-hmm. behavior. So there was, so again, because they seem to just like know what to do, how to stand. Where did they all get like the white cloth masks? Like they just happen to have those, or is that like Cult R Us? Like they get a discount or something? But
buy four or more, right. You get 20% off.
Exactly. Sign up for emails. No, but it's like it just, especially on the rewatch, like how did they know? And it's almost like they were maybe slightly possessed, because then after they kill off Redman, it's almost like, especially with Leonard, he snaps out of it and goes and throws up, and then they move the body, yeah, and everything. So I thought that was really kind of, huh, in that,
yeah,
how do you know what to do? And then, and now you're just like disgusted with yourself, or, you know, mm-hmm, reacting that way.
Well, yeah, because they were honestly not affected by what they were doing while they were doing it. Mm-hmm. It was the minute it was over and they snapped out of it that they had a freak out moment. And I think that goes back to that group think occult like mentality of like, well, that's what we have to do. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I didn't need more of this movie. I just feel like there could have been like a piece of dialogue in there that just explained a little bit more about this group, mm-hmm, of four people. And I feel like we got, I do believe we got enough of that. Like they're the four horsemen. They've all had visions, I feel like they talk about the visions all the time. And I was like, okay, I get it. You had visions. Mm-hmm. We've heard this, but like, what else? Like you met on a message board. Mm-hmm. Did you've only met one time? Did you never FaceTime? Did you never think, oh, this is weird. Maybe I shouldn't ask someone to kill their husband or child. Like,
it's like, and how intense were these visions? And then how often did Leonard see his, where he knew what the reporter was going to say and starts speaking along with her, which was pretty unsettling in of itself.
Yeah.
But
that's the beginning of that turn to, yeah, like, oh shit, this is real.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. But there's still very much like, is it just four completely random people? Were they somehow connected before via this chat room, or did they have these visions and then were just like so bothered by it that they just scoured the internet for any chat room that they could unleash this cuckoo banana stuff on and have someone be like, uh-huh. Like, were they on Reddit or?
Right. What subreddit is this? Right. Cults are like, join our cult, right, end of the world cult. Like, yeah, I was shocked, like genuinely shocked when I saw that this movie is rated R.
Mm-hmm.
There is no reason for this movie to be rated R.
No, not really.
I mean, there may be language. That's the only thing. And I think that's so bullshit when they're like, they say fuck two times within 20 minutes. So it has to be R now. And mm-hmm, I'm like, you say fuck in PG-13. Does that not matter? Like, I don't, it just.
Well, and it's like, I only remember one time they dropped the F word. But I say it.
I don't remember.
But I say it and I hear it so often that it doesn't always register. So.
Same.
But I was like, I'm watching it. And, you know, our 12-year-old, he's going to be 13. So we're kind of gearing up for like his first kind of R-rated movies, you know, whether horror, action. And I was like, I think this could be a good starter rated R movie. Yeah. It's not overly gratuitous.
It cuts away from all of the gore. You don't, mm-hmm, see any. You see, you hear it. You know, the gunshot, like, mm-hmm, the gunshots, the only thing that you see when Sabrina gets shot. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the only kind of violent. And you see the after effects after Leonard slits his throat. Mm-hmm. That's the only the two times you see any kind of gore or violence. And I'm like, is that all it takes? Because,
mm-hmm,
that's stupid. I see worse on the news. Like, literally,
oh my God,
on the
oh
news
shit.
This morning, they played a video of people in Israel, like, shooting and killing, like, dead bodies. And I was like, mm-hmm, this is worse than an R-rated movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, news.
God, we had the news on one night, and our youngest was like, are you sure this is appropriate for me to watch? We're like, that's a damn good question.
Yes, yeah.
But yeah, I like that it's not, I mean, it's got an R rating. I don't know, that does seem kind of odd, but the self-harm, yeah, maybe, who, I don't know, but it's, I thought it would be, I think it's kind of a good starter horror rated R movie. And maybe more just because of like the themes and the conversations about saving humanity, the end of the world, the bigotry that Eric and Andrew face, even from their families, even from Andrew's dad. And I'm sorry, but like, they're old. They drove 7 hours for a 45-minute visit. Like, that is old white man privilege, because chances are gas prices are high, and to just get back in the car and head home is fucked right. up on all levels. I mean, aside from the obvious that they're have problems with their kid or whatever, but
Yeah, some bullshit. Did his mom not look like Helen Mirren to you?
She did. Yes. Okay.
I was like, is that Helen Mirren? Yes. Is this bit part like cameo in this M. Night Shyamalan movie? Like, what the fuck? It's not, but it looked like her.
Yeah, definitely one I was like, I'm gonna check IMDb just to make sure. So
right.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think all the acting in this film is chef's kiss perfection. Everyone from Dan Bautista, Jonathan Groff, Ben Aldridge, Nikki Amuka-Bird, Rupert Grint, Abby Quinn, even little Kristen Cooey. She was great. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I love the performances. You know, you were talking, you said earlier about the tears welling up in someone's eyes and getting that close-up mm-hmm. shot. Jonathan's Eric also has that moment too. And as I love Mindhunter, so I loved seeing him back on my screen, and I'm still mad about that whole thing, yes, but
same.
Oh my God, he had all the emotions, his eyes, the tearing up, like it's happening. You see it happen. You see it kind of all hit him and sink in. And it was just so good. It was so moving. And I was like, yeah. See, he needs to be on TV more. They all did fantastic.
Yes, I agree. And I also, because I have complained about this on the podcast before, so I just want to shout out that we actually have queer actors playing queer roles. So thank you, M. Night Shyamalan, for giving us that. And I do think that helps this performance. I understand, and I have seen the criticisms of people who have this feeling, or the criticisms from people who disagree with me. I have seen them. I understand acting. I do agree. Acting, anyone should be able to connect to any experience. That being said, there is still a discrepancy. Yes, I think that's right. There's still a large amount of queer actors who do not get work simply because they are openly queer. Mm-hmm. Whereas there are a plethora of straight actors who get awarded awards for playing queer roles, for mm-hmm. telling our stories. And it just gets really fucking old. Now, do I hate every straight actor who played a queer role? No, they're some of my favorites. But do I think that Jonathan Groff and Ben Aldridge in this film are more authentic than... I was just like, who can I say in the first... person that popped in my head was James Corbin. but yes, like, are they more authentic? Are they better actors? Still, yes. But are they more authentic in these roles? Absolutely. They have lived this life. They know what it's like to walk into a bar mm-hmm. and not feel safe because of mm-hmm. who you walked in with. They know what it's like to have to pretend that your partner is your spouse's yeah. brother to adopt mm-hmm. your child. They know what it's like to have your parents come to dinner and shade your partner and not want to be there and leave early. Like, they know what it's like. It's different. There is a different thing from empathy of someone's experience mm-hmm. and actually living the experience. That is completely different, and no one will convince mm-hmm. me of otherwise.
No, I completely agree. I also agree. I think there definitely needs to be more queer actors playing queer roles. If a straight person gets it because they've got the acting chops and they can pull it off, great, fantastic. But I think that there does need to be a priority put on making sure that they can cast people that, like you said, can tap into those real emotions, especially when playing mm-hmm. a queer character, and especially for these two characters, everything that they've gone through. Like, I empathize mm-hmm. with Andrew's anger and his fear, especially after being attacked and him deciding that he needs to get a firearm to stay to stay safe. But I,
and a lot of women do.
Yeah, and I'm sure. But I don't completely understand. Like, you know, I haven't walked in those shoes. It is a
different fear. Yeah. I will never understand what it's like for a woman to walk down a dark street at mm-hmm. night, like by herself. Like, I will mm-hmm. never understand that.
But I can. Period. But I have, I feel like I have somewhat of an idea of what that's like. Not a full understanding, but I'm just kind of like, I get it. Right. I get it. And I think that's yeah. why I was very much Team Andrew throughout most of this movie. And sometimes I'm very much Team Eric, you know, when it's like, no, come on, guys, kindness and compassion. But after everything we just saw that they went through, I'm just like, let it burn.
Yes, that's honestly why I also like Eric and Andrew as a couple, because I think this is the struggle, at least from my own personal lived experience and other people that I have spoken to. This is kind of the struggle that a lot of, I'm gonna say queer people, but it probably aligns with a lot of marginalized communities. The struggle of, do I believe in, or do I want to be a positive person and hope for change and want to believe in the best from people? Absolutely. Do I have that in me? Yes. Do I try to go into every interaction I have with people and try to hope for the best? Absolutely. But is there, and that's the Eric side of me, but is there the Andrew side of me that is like, fuck mm-hmm. everybody. In different days and different times, different mm-hmm. ones of them went out. And right now with the state of the world, I'm like,
yep,
let it burn. Now in a month, I might be more Eric.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Exactly. Yeah. Right now, very much Andrew, Team Andrew. And, you know, because by the end of the movie, Eric has kind of come around and he sees it. He saw a figure. He had his own vision. Yes.
Did sure you did. Go back and look? Okay. I wanted to, but I started this like at 4 o'clock. So I had to didn't have time. Is there something?
There is something. And you kind of noticed, I even noticed it the first time around because it's a glare off the mirror. That's like right behind like Sabrina or someone. And when you're watching just that, you can go from the glare in that mirror goes from being able to see like a window pane to just like a kind of like a streak of white. And what that kind of looks like a figure, like a white, like an apparition of some kind type thing. And then it cuts away mm-hmm. to like Leonard or something. And when it goes back to that shot, it's just the window, that bright light, that glowiness. And you can see the window panes. Whereas when that white figure is there, you just see the white figure and not the window pane. So I did have to go back and check that out.
That's good storytelling.
Yeah.
That's good storytelling.
Liked that. I do like that Eric has his own vision, and that is what I think convinces Andrew. He doesn't do it for the world. He does it for Eric and for Wen and for Eric's vision. I think a big part of him still wanted to just say, fuck it all and let it burn. But I think especially in that moment, that very emotionally driven and intense moment where Eric is sharing his visions of the future and everything, and he sees how everything works out for Wen and Andrew. And it's just, I love that at that moment, it wasn't about saving the world, but about understanding his partner, his husband, and kind of following his wishes in that way that just so happens to save the world. Mm-hmm. So I felt mm-hmm. like Andrew didn't really like change his stance on things, but he loved mm-hmm. Eric that much where he's like, I will give you this one last gift, I guess.
And I think, and going from Eric's perspective, I think Eric did it for Wen.
Mm-hmm.
Because he says, that's not a future I want for my daughter. Mm-hmm. And then that's when he starts going into what he sees for her future. And I really liked that they showed that mm-hmm. as if that was what transpired. Like that is what happened. Mm-hmm. Now we don't truly know that that's what happened, but like that is what at least Eric has convinced himself in his last moments happened. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a beautiful comment on like, death and the legacy that we leave as human beings after we're gone from this lived experience. Mm-hmm. You know, not even talking about what a afterlife might be or would be or whatever you believe in your own faith journey, but like the legacy that we leave for other people. Mm-hmm. And I really like that moment, even though, and I guess now I'm talking about how I like the end. Damn it. Okay.
I know, right? Like there's,
I'm conflicted.
Yes, I completely agree. Like, I love downer endings. I love bummer ass, like just gut wrenching, destroy you mentally and emotionally for a couple of days ending. But in this, So I didn't feel like I really got that the first time watching it. But the second time, I don't know, maybe I connected a little bit more with Eric in that, you know, kind of parenting side of things, because all of a sudden I'm getting a little emotional watching it and I'm like, what the fuck is happening? Like, now
would you want your child to grow up in a world where they have no future?
Well, depends which child. Like, no.
But yeah, like, because I would be like, well, they would have like 50 good years, like that's good. But I'm like, damn, she's only like 56, and that's only if nothing happens. Mm-hmm. Like, that's only if they don't get bitten by something or hit by something or hurt by something and there's no doctors around. Mm-hmm. So it's probably less. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what is she supposed to do after they die? Just kill herself?
Right? No shit.
And then at the end of the day, then what the fuck did you do this for?
Exactly. But yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah.
The more I talk about it, the more I see Eric's point, and I think that it is kind of beautiful. I think my problem and the reason I'm feeling conflicted is not this movie, it's media. Mm-hmm. Because I grew up with queer trauma porn on TV and on movies throughout every, because we were it was today at work, they were talking about, like, I don't remember where it was, but they were talking about how media set up young boys to think like, oh no, it's when we were recording. Let's go out after that. We were recording about Idle Hands. We're releasing this after, this episode will be after that, so I can say this. And they're talking about how movies like this, movies like Idle Hands, taught young boys that, oh, you can just walk up to girls and they're just into you, you know? Mm-hmm. And then that leads to so many problems down the road. And I was, because that's what all the media was at the time. And I was like, well, damn, I guess media told me that I'm going to become a rancher and pretend to go fishing and then get hate crimed and killed. Because, or I'm going to kill myself, or, you know, because that was literally every queer story for so long. And I do think it's getting better, but I do think that's why I am conflicted about this ending. Mm-hmm. And so I hope generations in the future, when they watch this movie, are not as conflicted about this ending as I am.
Yeah. And I think one of the other things that didn't sit right with me was that the weight of this decision of saving the world falls on the shoulders of a queer couple, where one is clearly has the anger and the resentment. And I'm just like, especially that first time, I was like, why? Why does it have to be on them? Why? Why? Why?
Yeah.
And again, I was very much like Team Andrew, because I think if after that first watch, if I was more team, I would be so fucking resentful towards the rest of the world, even more so than maybe possibly already was. Like, yeah.
Yeah, but then you have that moment where, when Andrew comes up into the treehouse to get Wynn, and her first words to him, and it's just, oh, mm-hmm. God, it's so sweet. She said, did Daddy save the mm-hmm. world? And I was like, oh!
Totally, totally. And they had that moment, and they embrace, and they cry, and I'm just like, these two are going to need so much fucking therapy. Good thing the world didn't end. Jesus.
And you better give them a holiday. You better give them a key to the city. Every city in America, every city in the world, mm-hmm. you better get a key. Every village, every city, every lake, every stream needs to be named after them, or they get to let Wynn name them after her kid,
her grasshoppers,
school friends. Oh, yeah. Grasshoppers. Don't fart in there, because you're now sharing a jar with everyone. That was so cute. But yeah, like, it was just so heartbreaking. But I did love, because you had this such a downer end, and then they turned the car on, and that the song that they were listening mm-hmm. to earlier comes on, and he turns it off, and then she turns it back on. And it was just like, that's cute. I like that we lifted ourselves out of that
yeah
terrible, you know, well, devastating ending for these people, and then was able to, you know,
well, and what I
move on.
And what I liked about that I didn't notice the first time. So yeah, you know, they turn on the radio, it's the song. Andrew turns it off, he's distraught. Wen turns it back on, she sees that, you know, Daddy Andrew still isn't feeling it. So she turns it off and kind of hangs her head. Like, so they're just like, okay, so we're just going to be sad now. But then Andrew kind of maybe picking up on a bit of what Eric was, you know, his hopes and everything. Andrew turns it back on for them. And they kind of have yeah. that shared moment where they're having, where it's kind of the three of them again, you know, in that nice yeah. memorial. See, and again, here I am like, this is so sweet and beautiful. Why don't I hate it as much? But so I thought it spoke even more volumes that it went back and forth a couple of times.
Yes. I like that too.
Where it's very much like now Andrew is moving forward with this acceptance and he's putting his focus on Wen and kind of, at least for the moment, putting his sadness and everything aside to give her what, so they can try and heal together. You know, he, I think, not acknowledges yeah. that she turned it on, you know, for him, but then she turned it off because of him. And he's like, I don't want to be the reason why she's sad, kind of thing. So
right.
that was a nice, like,
yeah.
movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, I'm conflicted about the end. I did hate it, and now I'm conflicted.
Yes, same. Same. I was so mad the first time I watched this, and I was like, no, what the fuck is this? I was so mad. But this time around, I'm like, because again, like you said, it's definitely worth a second watch, because once yes. you know how everything all plays out, you kind of view it through that slightly different lens. And you almost kind of see and understand things from that slightly different perspective. So I think that's kind of also what has changed my mind about.
Yeah. And also knowing how the book ends, I would have hated the ending even more if it ended that way.
Oh my God. No shit.
I would have just killed myself. I would have just.
Like, look, those three would have needed to survive. What for this to be an acceptable ending? The rest of the world can die, but nothing needed yeah. to happen to those three. And so either way, we lose someone and it sucks.
Yeah.
But yeah, yeah. when if they
but I think that's a testament to how great these three characters were
yes.
written.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think, yeah, if the book ending was put on screen, there'd be a lot more trauma amongst the masses of how could they do that? So they save it for yeah. the book nerds, for the bibliophiles. They're like, no, right. they get to be traumatized.
Well, right. Especially with this being a child, like a child of color, mm-hmm. like that just adds even more. Mm-hmm. These adopted white parents kill the Asian daughter on accident when they're being forced to sacrifice somebody. Mm-hmm. I hate that ending.
Yeah.
I'm glad it might have changed it.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Oh, let's see. I think I like that this movie throughout it, even the second time, still kind of makes you go like, what the fuck? Again, that's that distrust kind of and not knowing who to trust and the doubt mm-hmm. and everything. So I like it when a movie makes you go, what the fuck, in a good way, and not when it's just a hot garbage mess, Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey.
Ooh, mm-hmm. skrr. Mm-hmm. I watched it.
And then one last thing that I didn't get on but like the choices of life or pettiness, trust, distrust, belief in something more than you, and believing only versus believing only what's in front of you. So again, you've got these four horsemen that believe in something bigger than them. As Sabrina even has a line similar to that, something her dad always said. Mm-hmm. Whereas, mm-hmm. you know, and then by the end, Eric, he has his vision. So he has a belief in something bigger than him now. Andrew maintains a belief in what's in front of him, and that's it. And again, when he chooses to take Eric's life, he's doing it because of what he believes and what he can see in front of him. And I think that's really kind of interesting. Something I didn't really pick up the first time, but really kind of watching it the second time and taking it in, and again, knowing how everything, it just kind of makes me, I just think it's kind of interesting. All these, you know, choices have consequences, all that kind of stuff. So,
yeah, I've actually recently, this kind of goes off of that. I recently was told something that I'm like, you know what? I am going to put that in effect in my life. That this person said, I'm less interested in the vertical and like what's going on in the heavens or the ethereal, what we can't know. I'm less interested in that, and I'm more interested on the horizontal. What am I giving to other people, and what are other people giving to me? And I was like, that right there could save the world.
I really like that.
Yeah. Because we don't know what's up there. We don't know what's bigger than us. There's no way we can know that. But I can know how I treat others. I can know how others treat me. I can know that I'm putting good out into the world, or at least trying to. And yada, you know, I think that's a more tangible thing than like focusing on whatever some book written thousands of, well, however long it was. I'm terrible at math, as the world knows.
Same.
However long it was written, whatever book it is. says about some thing in the sky that's the spaghetti monster that's watching over us, and you know, whatever. So all right, well, on that note, let's get to hot takes. Jen, what's your hot take?
Well, you know, originally, like, it was gonna be the ending for me, but I don't know, I guess now my hot take is, now I'm not as mad at it.
That's true. I think a second watch will do. If you were mad at the ending,
yeah,
take a second watch.
Yes, I agree, because it kind of, I don't know, it makes a little bit more sense. But again, some of the things, like we've talked about, you know, like that Eric had to give up his life, you know, one of them had to give up their life, and in that it all falls on the shoulders of this gay couple, like, just certain things still don't super sit well with me. But I guess, I guess because I was stuck on the ending for so long, I don't have any other hot take. I was ready when you suggested this movie. I was like, oh, I'm going to poop all over that ending. And now I watched it, I'm like, I can't, not a lot. I don't think I can.
I think my problem with the ending is, again, about everything else, not about this movie.
Yeah.
If I had grown up in a world where queer people were both celebrated, vilified, hurt, loved, not loved. Like, if there were the plethora of queer stories that we have of straight stories from the beginning of my existence, I would feel differently about this ending. I am who I am, and I have the lived experience I have.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I guess that's kind of, I guess the hot take is, watch it a second time. It's worth it.
There you go. I agree with that hot take. My hot take, which I don't know that a lot of people are going to agree with, is this could be the best M. Night Shyamalan movie. It is at least the best since The Sixth Sense. And here is my reasoning why. M. Night Shyamalan is a big ideas guy, right? He has these huge ideas, which sometimes work and sometimes don't work. I think his ideas work best when it is mostly, and I'm not saying that this doesn't have, or Sixth Sense doesn't have, like, otherworldly connotations and stuff happening, but this movie is about these three people. This movie is about Andrew, Eric, and Wynn, and how they interact together. It is not about some alien, or the plants are trying to kill us, or some wild fantastical thing. It is about human interaction that has some supernatural things around it. I think that is why my top three M. Night Shyamalan movies is this movie, The Sixth Sense, and Devil. Those are all three films that center around human interaction and aren't centered around some wild concept that is kind of cool and idea world, but doesn't translate to a story.
Sure. Sure.
Because it's not about anything human.
You know, and at first I was like, huh, with your hot take. But I think I would agree, because I've only seen a few other movies since The Sixth Sense. Forever going to be mad about the whole Avatar The Last Airbender live action mess.
Oh, God.
So that's always going to be, again, the pettiness. And while I did enjoy like Unbreakable, Glass, and Split, I think I would agree. I think The Sixth Sense and this, definitely this one, are in my book like the top two like best of his movies. While I enjoyed those other three, can I necessarily say that they are the best? I don't know that I would.
Yeah.
I don't think that they're necessarily for everyone, whereas Sixth Sense and this movie, I think there's more for a wider audience. And I think that has to do with that human interactions that you were speaking about. So I think that's a fair hot take. I don't think it's that hot. I think it's kind of warm.
Okay. I will say this. I have not seen a ton of M. Night Shyamalan either. I have only seen Unbreakable once, and it was when it came out. I have not watched it again. I have not seen Split, and I have not seen Glass. But here's the ones I've seen and I did not like. Old. Didn't like it. There was about 20 minutes that was okay. After Earth, bored. The Last Airbender, mess. Lady in the Water was good, but there was no like tangible things. The Village, hated it. Signs, hated it.
I didn't make it through that one.
You didn't miss much. The Sixth Sense, Devil, and Knock at the Cabin are the only three I didn't mention that I've seen, and I loved all three of them. That's my hot take. All right, so we have a new section since the last time you were on the show, and now we are giving each movie a rating out of 5 drinks. So, Jen, how many drinks are you giving Knock at the Cabin?
I will give this drink or this movie 3 cocktails and a shot. I think it's about a 3.5. I think it's really good. I think I'm still a little hung up the first time with the ending and everything, but 3.5 because I still have questions. And while for the most part, I'm okay with not getting them answered, I would like a little more information. I don't think that's going to hurt anything. Like why those 4 anyway? So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I think now my problem is more about, I want more information on these 4 people and less about the ending, but I'm still going to give this movie 4 Cosmos because Eric probably needs some Cosmos for what he had to deal with in this situation. And Andrew probably needs at least, so they both need 2. And we'll save, I'll go ahead and give it a shot too. We'll save a shot for when she becomes 21.
I love it.
Because they all need drinks and therapy. Yeah, so
a lot.
But yes. All right. Well, that is our thoughts on Knock at the Cabin. Thank you so much for joining me, Jen. It was a blast as always.
Yes, thank you so much. This was, thank you. This was a lot of fun. And I feel like I got a little bit of therapy talking this movie out with you. So thank you.
Good, good. We'll have to have you back. All right. I don't know what's next because I don't know when this is coming out. So we'll see what happens. All right, y'all. As always, make sure that you stay fierce out there. Bye.
Bye.